Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this last time we talked about having negative thoughts, and we had a lovely involved conversation, and we didn't finish. And so this time we're going to continue. Yes, yes, this is true. We actually also talked about negative thoughts about the coronavirus, which is, of course, the big topic of the day all over the world. And this is an international show, but quite frankly, it's an international, whoops, yeah. And so it's kind of like, well, we did talk about that being kind of, well, kind of a negative, right? Right. What else did we talk about? We talked about ourselves as leaders having negative thoughts, and about the thought that we might not be the right person for leader. And we decided that, of course, we are, because we are chosen, right? And even if we were chosen for a hidden agenda motive, right, because they didn't think that we were up to the task, well, let's prove them wrong, right? We know how to handle this. We also had the thought that we might be wrong for the group and not the quite proper the leader, right? No. We are models of confidence and enthusiasm, right? Yes. We are the proper. We talked about having a negative thought about being able to enforce the civility rules, and decided that we're going to call in the employer, which, of course, on this show is a generic term that indicates that they are whoever it was that had the good sense and intelligence to bring us in as leader. We call the employer, right? It does not indicate an employment relationship. Just remember that. And we decided that they were going to help enforce the civility rules because we got it down in writing beforehand, and that there was going to be a really good answer to the either implied or, quite frankly, I've been doing this a while, I've heard it actually asked outright in front of everybody, right, to the question by the nasty little bully-type person who is trying to be uncivil, the question, what you gonna do about it, when you say that that is against the civility rules and we will act with respect towards each other. What you gonna do about it? There needs to be something, that the answer needs to be good. The answer needs to be something important will happen to you, right? Right. And then we need to be models of civility. And when we thought about the negative thought that we were inexperienced, and not really, you are experienced with people, you're good with people, or you wouldn't be the leader, right? And the thought that if we really did think that we needed a little more experience in the negotiation field, we could volunteer, we could intern, we could kind of become participants in different groups that we were interested in and would give our full attention to, of course. I mean, we want to do a good job and give it and come with best effort so that we could get some experience and we could see firsthand how a different leader who we might admire does it, right? Right. And we talked about that, about volunteering, about making our reputation in the community also. Doesn't hurt a bit, right? The people say, oh, I remember Sue from when she volunteered with, fill in the blank. Usually it's Rotary or my church. But, yeah, when she figured that out and we had negotiation and we dealt with this government and it worked out because because she really knew how. I bet she'd be fabulous, see? And then, so you've made your reputation amongst people who have the say-so to be clients, right? Right, good thing. So, that's the recap. Did you like it? Yes. People are sending me a thumbs up. It's like, yes, we liked it. So that's what we talked about, but we didn't get any further than that. And we had more topics for ourselves as leader. And then we were going to talk about the negative thoughts of our participants because they count too, right? We want them to have a positive experience. And we have to think about whether or not they are having, well, whether or not negative thoughts are creeping in, right? Right. So the next topic that we were going to discuss is, because, of course, as usual, we decided what we were going to discuss. This is not a scripted show. And the next topic that we were going to discuss was the concept of, I don't understand what's going on. That's a negative thought. I don't understand what's going on, right? Yeah. I can see that something's going on, but I don't know what it is. What are we going to do about that? Yeah, even the most experienced of us have that. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? So what are we going to do? Well, yes, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to rustle up our empathy, which is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Understanding, not necessarily agreement. And we're going to rustle up our empathy and use it and find out what's going on by asking the 5W questions, right? Because they're open-ended questions that we want to know the answers to. They are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Do we ask them necessarily in that order? Not necessarily. That's a judgment call. In front of everybody. Frequently, but not necessarily. That's also a judgment call, right? Do we ask them by starting off the sentence, who, what, where, when, and why? That's five sentences, right? Who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? Why did you think that? Right? Essentially speaking, but of course in more detail for the specifics of the case. Mm-hmm. Do we start out? Yeah, I usually do. But you don't have to. You just have to figure out the answers to those questions, to the who, what, where, when, and why questions. Then you'll know what's going on. Then you have to consider whether what you're looking at is cliques, right? Yes, little groups of people who have gotten together and decided to exclude the others because they're the cool kids. Oh, no, not on my watch. Maybe it's because when I was in high school, I was never one of the cool kids. But I'm the leader, and therefore, I'm the boss. That makes me the extra cool kid. And we're going to subdivide the group into teams, right? And we're going to divide up the cliques. So these people have to talk to someone else besides the clique leader, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true, too. Sometimes people have a hidden agenda. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sometimes employers have a hidden agenda. And you need to think about it and try to recognize it. And ask and find out how that's going to impact us. One of the ways with an employer to know how to do that is the thing that I always do is I want them to define success for me. I want to know what in their minds success looks like. Because if they don't have that clear, how are we going to work towards it, right? Yeah, I want to know what success looks like. Mm-hmm. And then we have to establish between the employer and us, so the group and everybody, that whatever that definition is needs to be flexible because it's too early to put it in stone. It's too early to decide for sure. Well, all right, sometimes what success looks like is obvious. I mean, you can make them say it, but it's not... I want to win the election, that kind of success. You know what I mean? there's a real obvious answer to what does success look like. But even the obvious ones, there's nuances. But not. But with. Right? There's always a but somewhere. And you got to know what the but is. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you got to know what the parameters are, what success looks like. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they have hidden agendas. Sometimes people on the team have hidden agendas, especially if you have been handed a team and you haven't chosen them. Because if you've chosen them, you will choose carefully amongst people. Well, sometimes you don't know them, but you can look at their qualifications. Even if I don't personally know them, I try to find somebody who's worked with them before, because everybody looks good on paper, right? Yeah. If they didn't have the right qualifications that look good on paper, they wouldn't be in your stack. They wouldn't be a candidate. The question is, are they as good as they look, A, and B, are they people that really understand the art of compromise, right? Yeah. And how to negotiate and how to reach a successful, workable outcome. And did they do it before somewhere else, right? Yeah. Yes, we don't consider an outcome, at least I don't. I don't consider an outcome successful unless it's workable. Unless in the real world, after we stop negotiating and we reach agreement, in the real world we can implement. Yeah, we can still deal with each other. We can do whatever needs to be done. We can implement and maybe even keep track. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing I really, and you guys have heard this, yes, thank you. You guys have heard me say this before, but there's quite a few new people too, and I never realized how many shows away it was that I said it, because the shows are, of course, archived, but most people don't go too, well, a lot of people do, though. You look at the titles and see what you like. I really don't like the sentence agreement in principle. Agreement in principle means we couldn't reach a workable outcome. We agreed in principle that we couldn't agree. Ah, gee willikers. Let's try not to do that. Let's get an agreement in real life, an agreement that we can do, something that's really, really good and workable and will, and yes, and doesn't violate the law of unintended consequences, because we have had experts in. We're going to be talking about experts a little further down, but we've had experts in because I like to have experts to double-check our work before we implement, before we act, right? The reason being is that sometimes we just don't realize an impact, right? Yeah. And we don't want to know about it afterwards. We want to know about it now and take it into consideration. I don't like unintended consequences. I don't like to have to explain to somebody we didn't think about them at all. And we didn't notify them that we were about to do this because we didn't know they existed. Ah, no. And yes, it is indeed one of my true, it's not really rules, but something I do always. Well, always is a bad word, I suppose. To do the majority of times when it's needed, right? Whenever it's needed, which is the majority of times. I like to call in more than one expert. I like experts on opposing sides. We want to hear how come. We want to hear how come they have opposing sides, right? We want to hear what's going on, right? Yeah. Why is this? Why do we have this? What's going on? What's the outcome that's going to occur? Yeah, we want to know. We surely do. Yeah, we want to know all of these things. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I like to call in experts, and I like them to validate what they say. Show us why, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So we have empathy. We have understanding. We have experts. We don't have the law of unintended consequences, so that's not going on. How about hidden agendas? I see it a lot. I do. And you may see it too, but you need to think, you don't think about it so much. So sometimes, okay, you know, when you're in the field long enough, you get a specialty. And if I have a specialty, which kind of you do get, it's coming in after a group has failed. That can't fail, they need to get it done, and fixing it and getting them to agreement and like that. But that means that sometimes, and if my participants need to be the same people, which oftentimes this is the truth because they are a certain level of employment, so my participants don't change from the failed group. They've already got a preconceived notion of failure, right? Is that an agenda? It's not good. And the employer may not wish it to go forward or may also have a preconceived notion of failure. We got to get that straightened out. And before we start, right? Right. But sometimes people who really have a hidden agenda, and it's not that hidden because a lot of times they're the ones that go uncivil too, are the former leader who didn't make it is now a participant, and his or her followers, his or her clique, right? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. No. You see, they have a hidden agenda that they prefer it to fail again, because then they could say to everyone in sight who has an interest, Sue couldn't make this work. Nobody could. See, I'm not a stupid, pompous fool that couldn't get this to work. I'm not a bad leader. Nobody could get it done because you called in the big guns and she couldn't get it done either. Ha! Hidden agenda of I'd like this to fail. This is an interesting question that's come up from you guys. Thank you. Asking about what I'm going to call a comfort zone. It's not exactly a hidden agenda, but it's kind of the urge, which is very human, to do things as they've always been done. That's your comfort zone, right? Corporations and organizations, I won't call them corporations because they're all not corporations. Organizations have comfort zones, ways that things have always been done. And it is easier as an employee, as a person, as a whatever, it is easier to just go along and to say, well, this is how things have already always been done. This is what you would like to see. This is what I'm going to give you. No thought required, right? Yeah. And in order to violate that comfort zone and wanting to do that, it's not exactly a hidden agenda. It's human nature. Well, all of it's human nature, come to think of it. But it's more like a comfort zone. And so you have to show people the reason why we're leaving the comfort zone and that we're not really leaving. We're just improving it. We are modifying it. We're being flexible. We're looking at the circumstances that exist today that weren't there yesterday, that when the comfort zone was made. Because comfort zones are usually ingrained. They've been there a while. That's why they're comfortable, right? Right. And we look at that and we say, well, we're not really violating it. We're just modifying according to the circumstances as they exist now. Right? Right. Yeah. A lot of times that happens because of new technology has kind of changed the game. Okay. I'll accept that. A lot of you are saying that you think the coronavirus is going to need some stepping out of comfort zones to figure out what to do next. Okay. Business-wise and negotiation-wise and like that, yeah. And also, some actions will be postponed because of the coronavirus, unavoidably. And there, because it's so catchy and like that, and we will negotiate differently. We'll negotiate online, which is different for some people. And it is outside, the whole thing is outside of the comfort zone. So people try to scurry back because it's so, You know, there's an old curse that says, may you live through interesting times. That's what we're living through, interesting times. Now, are they cursed? Not necessarily, but things will be different. Things are different right now. And one has to be flexible in order to accommodate that. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. What's the next topic that we thought we were going to discuss last time and we didn't? It's the negative thought of the leader that this effort is futile. We're really spinning our wheels for nothing. This is absolutely futile, right? Mm-hmm. The answer is no, it's not. You need to define success carefully, which is what we just discussed, so that it's doable and not futile. Sometimes people or organizations or whatever, employers, have bitten off too big a bite, right? Too general, too much, too 17 steps away from when we are now. And you need to help them to understand that it's not futile, but it's too big for the moment. We need to take some steps in between, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. Lee and others are saying you need sufficient time, money, and resources in order to make something not futile. Time, money, and resources. Yes, you do. This is absolute truth. Otherwise, you're going to maybe get to an agreement, but it will not work. Because nobody has the time, the money, or it needs sufficient time, money, and resources. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Money is a resource, but resources that aren't money are mainly people and maybe equipment, right? Yeah. People to do things, people to know things. How about our experts, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nothing can't be solved, but sometimes it's kind of a big deal proposition, and you have to decide if that's something that you're going to pursue. From an economic standpoint, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's true, too. We're doing quarantine in the States. It's just, well, it's time, money, and resources. But actually, a lot of our work is done on the computer and on Skype and on Zoom and other programs, I call it a program, and other ways of connecting. FaceTime, through social media and apps and things like that. And so it's like, well, yeah, but we're fine. It'll be fine. We're cool. Mm-hmm. So it is not a futile effort, but it needs to be more narrowly defined. And you need sufficient time, money, and resources. Ah, good question. Yes. Jason, others are asking, how do you determine at the beginning how much time, money, and resources you're going to use? Well, I'm pretty experienced, so I do it myself. You might call in an expert to give you an idea, right? Somebody in the field. And I personally, when I'm talking to the employer, I figure big amounts, big amount of money, big amount of resources, long time, as long as we can get, and like that. Because if you come in under, man, you're a genius. Your reputation is intact. If Sue can do it, if I ask for a whole, usually money is not a tremendous problem because I deal corporate. Excuse me, I take a sip. Pardon me. Pardon me. Oh, now I always sound like that. People ask if I'm getting sick. It's on everyone's mind, isn't it? Well, God willing, I hope not. But what were we talking about before I did that? Yes, your reputation. Hello. Thank you for listening to me. Your reputation will be fabulous because people say, well, see, money's usually not my problem, but time and resources are. Sometimes there's an actual deadline. Something must be filed with the government by a certain date. Sometimes the deadline is kind of artificial because the employer made it, the leader decided on it like that. I like to make a timeline. I don't usually make a timeline. I know some of you love to. But I like to estimate time big also because I don't like keeping pushing deadlines away. Because if you keep breaking a deadline and then it doesn't make any difference, then you don't have a deadline and everyone knows it and they won't respect it because there isn't one. Because every time you get close and nobody has to work really hard and fast and like that, you go, oh, well, we'll just give it another couple of weeks. Well, hell, folks, you don't have a deadline. Yeah, no, it's, yeah. So I estimate high all the way around. And then sometimes I have underthought it in my mind, and I need every penny, every resource, and every minute. Sometimes I come in under budget and faster. That's a wonderful thing, right? Right. So, hey, estimate truly sufficiently and more than you think how much it's going to cost in time, money, and resources. We also had negative thoughts about our lack of knowledge. Well, that's what experts are for, right? Mm-hmm. Also, in today's day and age, of course, there is the Internet. And you can send out a team, a subcommittee or whatever, to search the Internet. You can do it yourself. But be sure that every side has been researched and looked at, and that nobody quit, you or your team or whatever, nobody quit when the Internet agreed with them, and they printed it out and went, ha, we are geniuses. Look, these people did it too. They're geniuses also. Mm-hmm. You need to see all sides because they're all valid, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. People are asking who to hire as an expert. The answer is it depends. I know you hate it when I say that. But I like an expert, personally speaking, I like an expert who has done it, who's been in the field. I'm not as interested in degrees, in letters after a name, in name recognition, and like that. I'm interested in how'd you do it. Or if you didn't make it, which is sometimes just as interesting, what do you think happens so we can avoid those pitfalls? Hey, that's interesting to know too, right? Yeah. How'd you do it and what do you think happened if they didn't do it, right? Right. And I like those types of people as experts. Employers and the media. Because you can't forget the media. They might have taken interest. The media being all kinds of media nowadays. Employers and the media are impressed by credentials. So you might have two types of experts. You might call in somebody who's truly got an interest and has been working in the field, so to speak, been really doing it. And for a spokesperson, you might have an expert who looks fancier, who has more credentials, right? Yeah. It's kind of marketing sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. But, of course, when you, as a team, agree on a certain path to take, you want your expert to back it, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So what kind of participants' negative thoughts do we have? We talked about ourselves, but how about our participants? Hang on, we'll take a sip. Thank you. Sorry about that. It's truly a live show. It's like, hello, I got to pay. Oh, no, never mind. So what participant negative thoughts do they have? Yeah, I'm going to say I think this is a real common thought. When you are a participant, you have this thought that you're kind of wrong for the group, right? You're there. I see a lot of people who are the same level of employment, like supervisors, who all need to be in on the agreement, on the decisions and like that, because they're going to enforce it for the people who are lower down on the hierarchy. And sometimes people are the same level, but they're not the same talent. And because they're not little machines. I mean, they come from different areas and like that. And you have to recognize that, and everybody needs to put in their best efforts and play to their strengths and their talents, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is kind of what I'm saying. Oh, I got caught. Mm-hmm. Janice and others are asking, does that mean that I think sometimes people are correct in their negative thought and they are wrong for the group? Yes. Sometimes, and that's why you as a leader are in charge of the group dynamic. You've got to make this mesh. You've got to make this work as a group so that we can get to our successful outcome. If you don't make it work as a group and don't reach your successful outcome, it's not going to be good, right? Right. No. You want to work towards becoming a team, which is the key to it. That's what a group dynamic is. We're working together and giving it all our best efforts, right? And then you no longer feel wrong for the group, and you aren't. Also, if you're going to make like subcommittees and stuff, think about people's strengths and play to them so that they can be on the right smaller team too and really go, yeah, I didn't think I was right for this group, but I think it's going to be okay. Yeah, we've got this. We've got this pretty much figured out. We're fine. Yeah. Yeah, you ever had to take 3 deep breaths and actually say that to yourself? We're fine. Yeah. Yeah, remember to do it. Yep. And in order to make this work, you're going to have a process that's easy to understand and allow questions, right? Your process has to be easy. I announce pretty much how it's going to work on a process basis when we start out, and then we modify as we go along, right? Right. Because somebody has to keep track of the progress. Now, when you're first starting out, it might be you. But you're going to get kind of busy doing other groups, doing mediation, doing alternative dispute resolution, being you, right, being the leader. So you do need some help, yes. And you do need to be open to questions about what the expectations are, which is very important to establish, and how you're expected to meet them, and by what time, that's true. Pardon me. Yes. So somebody has to keep track. And so I repeat instructions because people need to ask questions too. And you give people instructions of what they're supposed to do for the next time, right? I like to repeat my instructions, not like I've seen it done word for word except louder. No. They have to be said in different ways so that people understand what it is that is expected of them, right? What it is that is expected of them. And then they can go forward with their best efforts. Also need to keep track of how they're doing in between meetings and like that on their assignments, because sometimes people still get off track. They haven't quite understood the situation yet. Right? Right. Uh-huh. It doesn't mean they're dumb. It just means that they're busy. And they kind of heard what they heard because we all listen with our own ears, right? Yeah. And sometimes not so good. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you also need to be open to questions. Now, people are asking for the process part about interns versus paid. Interns are fabulous, but they are inexperienced. They need looking after. They're not usually real big self-starter. Well, some of them are, but you have to know it. right? And they don't last forever. Paid people, and you should have at least one assistant who you should pay as much as you humanly possible can, because they're worth their weight in gold. Don't tell my assistant I said that. But I do indeed pay extremely well. And because somebody has to keep track of the whole thing, and you're too busy, right? Yeah. And needs to keep track of how people are doing in the process, how they are, how they're completing their assignments, has to keep track of any kind of deadlines, has to keep track of the interns, because they need some help and some keeping track of. I truly don't, okay, it depends what your group is doing and what your resources are. So I take this back. Hang on a second. So I take it back about the level of intern. I think, though, if you're going to give your intern some adult responsibilities, they should be adults. And what I'm telling you is we actually interview. We ask for some recommendations before we take you on, hopefully from somebody we know so that we can ask them what they thought. And you can use your college professor, yes. And we do not take anyone who is not at least MBA, as in they already have a college degree and they're going further in their education and beyond. They can get credit for us, which is how they're paid, in credit, because they're not free help. First of all, they need direction. Second of all, you need to really listen to them and have meetings and stuff, because it is supposed to be a learning experience and not just slaves, right? And they need, by the time they know what they're doing in your organization, they need to be there a sufficient amount of time so that they become useful to you, right? Yeah. So there's quite a bit needs to be done with interns. And yes, they get a grade, and you have to write, I don't know about you guys, but around here you have to write up how they did and like that. It's not just a grade, you have to give like a report on them. Usually the grade for an internship is pass-fail, but the report is the thing that's important, right? Yeah. And I like them to be able to stay on for a year, maybe, because it takes a while for them to be useful. And they want to stay on for a year and get credit for it. So I'm kind of fussy about what type of college we get them from so that they have some background. Maybe they have interned someplace before, right? Yeah, it's all good. But you need to be open to questions, and you need to show your participants that they are not in the wrong group. How about the next one, which is a failure attitude, right? Failure attitude. This group has an attitude of failure. You know how come? Because they already failed, right? Or whatever it is we're trying to do has been tried, well, more than twice, and it's never worked before. Sometimes your group has an attitude of failure, right? Yeah. First of all, you announce that you're a new sheriff, new leader. That makes a difference. We're not going to fail under my watch, and we're not, to tell you the honest truth, because I really, really, really like my reputation to be intact. You need to analyze why, right? Why it failed. That's where an expert comes in sometimes. Maybe even an expert who also failed and has an opinion about how come that happened, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never been done before and already tried, I see, is talking about failure attitude. Never been done before and already tried. Well, I like to use the expression new and improved. Well, this is now, though. Already been done before, already tried, failed last time. you got to look at that maybe before even you take on the group. Because if they're destined to hit a wall, that may be the employer's hidden agenda. I tried to find resolution, but they wouldn't do it, right? But sometimes things change that make it possible now to be able to do whatever the goal is that wasn't possible then. And in today's day of technology and like that, the day of then, the past, could be very long. It can be quite recent, right? Yeah. Yes, it's like guaranteed obsolescence. You have to kind of get a new computer with some regularity, or you won't be able to keep up because you won't have enough guts. You won't have enough power, right? Right. Yeah, so a failure attitude because we're not going to fail, right? Yes. Even if you've been sent in there, and I know this wouldn't apply to any of you, but just take this wisdom with you towards other people you know. But even if you as participant or you as leader, not quite up to it, that shouldn't, not the A team, right? That shouldn't impact the successful outcome because you can grow into being up to it, right? Let's talk about personal agendas. We did hit on them. Sometimes the participants have a negative personal agenda. Sometimes the negative thought is really put in their head and twisted by invisible participants. Yeah, that's different than anonymous. Invisible participants is somebody who is influencing your participant, but not in the room. Usually somebody they want the respect of, somebody they admire, somebody who can do something for them, right? But there's invisible participants who are kind of getting reports. Now, I say reports kind of carefully because it's not necessarily a 20-page written document, single-space typed. But these invisible participants, and I call them that because they're not in the room and nobody's mentioned them, are influencing our actual participants and keeping track and like that and having an opinion. We find them out with empathy, right, with the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why. I like to invite them into the room. I do. You got to have guts. Invite them into the room. Invite them to participate, right? If they don't want to, I'd like to hear about them anyway. I'd like to know what their agenda is, what their opinion is, right? Yeah. Sometimes you also get anonymous participants. A little bit different, actually quite a bit different. Invisible participants are influencing your participants. There's somebody behind them whispering in their ear, so to speak. Sometimes the invisible participant is a culture and not necessarily a human, right? It's a cultural more, a cultural way of thinking about life. And it does make a difference. Now, anonymous participants are those people who think whatever you're doing is a good idea, but they don't want anybody to know that they think that. They are willing to help. They are willing to steer you in the right direction. They are willing to give advice and have an opinion. But they don't want their name put on it, right? Yeah, no, not usually. No, these people are not criminals. Not usually because of anything bad. Usually it's because they themselves, the anonymous participant, anonymous expert really is what they are, the anonymous person is in the organization so they can see what's been going on and they don't like it. And they are willing to help, But they're in a good position, and just in case this don't work, they don't want to be the one who helped. Does that make sense? Sure it does. Because they don't want to be the person that said they thought that the status quo was bad in some way. It's going to hurt their job or some sort of another thing that's important to them, right? Yeah. So anonymous experts are wonderful. You must not divulge their identity to anybody unless they give you permission. Anonymous is sacred. Mm-hmm. Too hard is the question. Too hard is a negative thought. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I think sometimes leaders have that negative thought too. This is just too hard. I don't want to be in this group. It's taking too much time. I want to be sitting with my feet up, eating a hot dog and drinking a beer, or whatever it is you guys like to do. No, people ask if that's what I'd like to do. Yes, but I don't, because I have diabetes and it's really a bad idea. Yeah, see, circumstances change. There was a time when I really could and eat all kinds of things that I would really like to eat. But my circumstances changed. And so that has to be taken into account, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, example. There we go. We had an example. Too hard. Ugh. Let's celebrate each success. Because then people feel, oh, that's not so bad. We're getting somewhere. And there was cake. Yeah. Actually, I like to actually celebrate. If there's any kind of a budget or anything, and even if there's no budget, we can all, I don't know, throw $10 into the hat. And I like to go someplace together. Get away and just, I don't know, talk about stuff that we talk about during the potluck. Remember, it's a good way to get to know each other, to do something that is not going to be adversarial in any way, right? And you'd be surprised. The most diverse people in the whole world, you think, oh, my goodness, these people really have nothing in common. They sit around and they chat and they find out, they start taking out their phones and showing photos, because we've all done that, right? And they find out they've got grandchildren in the same school. They know somebody. They know somebody that's a neighbor, right? Yeah. It's the darndest thing. It does make everybody not have that many areas of separation. Exactly. It is very, very team building to celebrate each success. It's not just because we like donuts. Diabetes, yeah, never mind. But we celebrate each success because it brings us better as a team and really solidifies the group dynamic, which is what we're trying to do. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, and if you have a nice convivial atmosphere, right, and the civility rules are in effect and everybody's feeling respected, right, people want to stay in the group. They want to give their best efforts. They say to the invisible participants and their spouses or significant others or whoever, when they get back, they say, well, you know, that's kind of a good group. We really are getting somewhere, right? Good point. For these celebrations, have people bring somebody. How about their invisible participant? Yeah, come on down. Come on with, right? Of course. Of course. In fact, we always encourage people to bring someone with them, to bring a guest. Yeah. And usually they bring somebody who has an interest in the group, who's kind of been hearing about it in its way. Remember, we have a moratorium. We have a rule about how we will not be social media-ing anything while we are in process. Because, folks, we are in process. And that will be misquoted, misconstrued, and last forever, because I don't know why people don't figure this out. It's in writing, in a public forum. It's going to be misquoted and used forever. Do not do it. So we have a media spokesperson, which we've talked about in the past. Yes, one person who is the media contact and says what we want them to say, says the party line, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Yes. The other thing that that participants have, which is a negative thoughts, is fear. Yeah, fear. Fear that they won't do it right. Fear that a report's being made and it will impact their employment. Fear, all kinds of fear, right? Yeah. Which makes them sometimes makes them quite reticent also. Fear about not leaving, about not being a pioneer, right? A lot of people don't want to be the one that leads the band. They want to sit in the back with their clarinet and hope that nobody notices them very much, right? Right. Yeah. And, yeah, I must confess this, yes. I always wanted to be concert mistress. I was in the orchestra. I played the violin. And, yes, and yeah, concert mistress. I actually was concert mistress high school. Because it was my personality to want to be the one that comes out on stage separate and shakes the conductor's hand, right? Right. Mm-hmm, just saying. But a lot of people don't want to. They want to sit in the back and hope to God that nobody calls on them, right? Don't want to be a pioneer. Don't want to be the first one, right? Yes, they don't want to leave their comfort zone. Exactly. It's hard to leave the comfort. It's hard to be the first one to say, you know, I think circumstances has changed, and this thing that we've always done, that's always been good, that everyone expects us to do, I don't think we should do it. I think we should go and do something else. That's why we use the word modify a lot. So that people don't get completely scared and run off because their comfort zone has been violated. Right? Right. Yes. No. It's hard, and you have to understand that. And people do have negative thoughts about having to be the one, which is why they have us as leader, because we can point out to the employer that circumstances have changed. And sometimes they have. I've seen comfort zones in organizations, I won't say which ones, big ones, that have been around since the founder, and they have been around 100 years. I think circumstances have changed. Not core values, as in we don't steal or kill anybody, but circumstances of how, well, the modification due to technology and like that, and the way the world works, and being global. Makes a difference. And I am very big on moral comfort zone because I do think that it's important to have some moral standards, basic ones. We will act with dignity and respect, and we won't cheat anybody, right? Right. You want to do something outside of your basic moral standards, do not call me in as leader because we're not going to do it, and that's all there is to it. Okay, you know how we never get to the recipes? We're going to get to one because you guys have been mentioning that we never get to the recipes, and I should stop promising two at the beginning when I say we're going to have two delicious recipes made for sharing. You guys are like, yeah, you don't even get to one. So let's do one. Yes, we've left time. So, I think, in fact, Recipe for Peace now advocates that we have some food in the room. The reason we might be hungry, but the real reason that we have the food in the room is because it makes for a more convivial atmosphere, right? Right. And we want people to kind of get to know each other and to do something that they're not going to fight about. Mm-hmm. We can all agree that something is delicious, and it's nice to have a treat. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to do that, and we are, we need to take a survey and find out if anybody is allergic to anything, has something they don't or won't eat or can't, some sort of religious prohibition, for example, or maybe like me, diabetes, and a health reason. I don't eat desserts, and it is, but I don't. prevent people from bringing dessert because everybody else likes it, and I'm not that kind of person. I'm the leader. Y'all can have popsicles. It's good. But, and we want to ask everyone, so we disseminate that information, and we want everybody to bring, when they bring something, to bring a list of what's in it so I can run my eye down the list and decide if I can eat this, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So, which one should we do first? Should we have a vote? You guys want the chicken and sausage stew. That is the adventure recipe. It's an adventure recipe because it has sausage. That's pork. You have to be certain that everybody's okay with that because we don't want anybody to have a bad time. And there'll be plenty of safe recipes and like that. There's lots of choices we can make that don't violate somebody's I don't eat pork. Sometimes people don't eat all kinds of things. Yes, if you've got vegans, but they're not all vegans, have like two dishes. That you don't have to be everything that everybody can eat. But people have to respect that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Kosher or something like that, that's an entire group of rules concerning food and its preparation. If everybody is kosher, that's different. We all keep kosher and we all do it. But if there's one person who can't eat anything because of the way it's prepared, we will provide a kosher treat for them or ask them to bring something kosher that they can eat and we can all taste. I always say, could you please bring something? I'm sure it's going to be fabulous. Bring something kosher that you can eat, and you take yours first, and then bring a whole bunch of plastic utensils so that all of us can taste your wonderful thing but not contaminate it. Right? Right, yeah. Bring a whole bunch of plastics, big plastic spoons, and we'll use it the one time to taste it because we all want to experience it, and it's fabulous. And like that, and yeah, and people are so impressed that you understand that they would like that and that it's serious, and so impressed that you will accommodate that, I've had people bring like four different things. It's fabulous, and they're like, here, this is this, and this is cake, and like that, and we're like, ooh, yes, come and negotiate with us at any time. You're invited back. But yeah, so you just have to be, you have to be polite. Yes, but things like I cannot bring a kosher dish that I make. I would have to buy it from a kosher caterer and have it sent in, which can be done to accommodate. It's not, we've done it. But I can't bring a kosher dish that I've made in my kitchen because everything in my kitchen does not meet the utensil requirements. And the pots is that, okay, everything I own has seen pork. I mean, really. But I don't have it set up like that. It's complicated. And, yeah, we've actually catered kosher in our day, if it need be. Yeah. Hey, it's fine. It's delicious. Okay, so let's do the chicken and sausage stew. It's an adventure because, oof, we now have 1 minute. Let's do it fast. It's an adventure because it has the sausage. So let's have like eight boneless, skinless breasts of chicken that you cut I'm going to cut them into chunks, right? Uh-huh. You can use this for, I hate to say this, but for leftovers also, I do it all the time. You can use cooked chicken or cooked turkey or cooked some sort of protein. Meat, not so much. Well, maybe it depends on the meat. Could use ham. Ham pork would be okay. It needs to be something that's not real tough because it could get recooked, of course. Let's have a nice big onion. I like a big sweet one. Four garlic cloves. I like garlic. If you don't think that's too many, finely chop them, use less. A nice big chorizo sausage that we're going to slice up, right? Let's have, half pound of some sort of cooked ham, right? We go with our cooked chicken. Oh, don't say anything about that. Let's have a nice big pepper, like a bell pepper, a green one and a yellow one, both of them, seeded, chopped. Take the vein thingy out. couple of large tomatoes chopped up. You could even use a can of tomatoes, but they'd have to be drained, of course. And let's have some oregano and thyme. You know what I use? I'm in America, it's called Mrs. Dash. It's a dried combo seasoning of herbs. It's delicious. And then you don't have to mess with anything. And, of course, we're going to cook some rice to go underneath it, to go with it, right? Fry the chicken if they're not already cooked. I'm going to assume they're already cooked. So we're going to take some oil, about 4 tablespoons of olive oil. Add the onion and the garlic. Fry it up until it begins to soften. Add the chorizo and the ham. Stir fry it. Add the peppers. Cook until they get edible, until they get a little bit soft. Yeah, don't cut them too big so that we can get it done. Take our rice because we've got the rice is raw. Unless you want to use leftover rice too, you could do that. So we're going to add that in, stir it for about a minute because we're kind of getting it toasted. We're going to add the tomatoes. Did I say chicken stock? We need 4 cups of chicken stock. Forgot to say the chicken stock, didn't we? 4 cups of chicken stock. How about adding a little bit of sherry also, like a half cup of sherry? Makes it taste good. And the dried herbs. We stick all the protein in there, the ham, the chicken, like that. We're going to cover and cook it about half an hour until the rice seeps up all the liquid and is deliciously done. Oh, yummy. Everybody loves it. We're going to serve it with a big spoon, right, so that we can handle it and not be messy. If you want, you could make, of course, the rice separate. I tend to make the rice separate. The reason being is that it's better portion-wise. A lot of people like a lot of rice and a little bit of the stew, and some people like a lot of stew and a little bit of rice. I don't usually put the rice in, but you guys can decide. The recipe calls for the rice to be in. Pardon me. I have a rice cooker. It's one of the few things I have that only does one thing, but it does one thing well. And the rice cooker is fabulous, and we use it, and we put the whole big rice cooker of rice with one of those ladle-type spoons separate, and everybody can take what they want. So I would not put the rice in. I would just make the stew. But the concept is to make everything delicious and come together. And the more cooked it is, of course, the less you have to cook it, right? Because if it's cooked chicken, you don't have to cook the chicken. It needs to be just incorporated and heated and kept warm and delicious. And that is the adventure recipe because of the sausage. And also because we're going to add a little bit of sherry for taste. I know, don't argue with me about it burning off and like that. And, yes, don't forget the chicken stock like I did. And I'm like, oh, wait, we need the liquid, right? Right. Delicious, yes. If you're not putting the rice in the pot with the stew, a little bit less liquid. I like my stew thicker. I err on the side of less liquid to start with. Then I peek at it, go, that's not enough liquid, and I throw some more in. Right? Right. Yes, you could. You could also, if you're going to use a can of tomatoes, you could use the tomato juice in the can. I think the chicken stock makes it a little more delicious. Be careful to use some chicken stock, too. And hey, the sherry doesn't hurt either. Folks, we are out of time. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, recipeforpeacenow.com, right? Prior shows archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.